Hi and hello. Welcome, good friends, better friends, and enemies of the RBR.music podcast. Here you'll find the creator of the RBR.music Instagram page, Jordan Murray, and myself, Steve Curley, taking a deep dive into music documentaries. It's our vision to cut through the noise to discuss the sound and vision. In this episode, we're going to be discussing When You're Strange, the mystical story of the ever elusive Jim Morrison and the Doors. Over to you, Jordan.
Yeah. So for a band whose short yet meteoric career was ignited by the hit Light My Fire, the first full-fledged documentary about the Doors, When You're Strange, is distressingly short on creative spark or historical illumination. The calling card of When You're Strange, directed by Tom DiCillo and narrated by Johnny Depp, is some previously unseen footage of the band and its magnetic lead singer, Jim Morrison. That includes dramatic live performances from The Ed Sullivan Show in 1967, a 1968 TV appearance in Copenhagen, and shots from the wild, anarchic Florida concert that led to Morrison's conviction and indecent exposure. But the footage is deployed in a Doors 101 manner that provides less insight about what earned Morrison and the group a place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame than we can just find on a Wikipedia bio. The most inventive aspect of it is the inclusion of several scenes from Morrison's own attempt at an indie film. But even those are given no context that might help further what ought to be a compelling look at the live fast, die young credo of the era. That renders When You're Strange of little interest to anyone beyond hardcore Doors fans hungry for any previously unreleased film or audio content. Whether by DiCillo's design or through the process of vetting it through the often contentious committee of those who control the Doors' ongoing artistic and business dealings, the film rejects many of the principles of basic storytelling. Skipping any modern-day interviews with the surviving, at the time when it was released, the surviving members or others who could shine a light on why the band's music and Morrison's memory have so long endured. DiCillo, whose previous feature-length films include Delirious and Living in Oblivion, also opted against including interviews with musicians who were influenced by Morrison's personal charisma, his poetry, or the group's often gothically dark music. The visceral thrill of hearing the best of the band's repertoire in the pristine recordings incorporated in the film does more to explain its ongoing popularity than documentary's paper-thin biography. For the scant attention it pays to the backgrounds of Morrison's bandmates, guitarist Rob Krieger, keyboardist Ray Manzarek, and drummer John Densmore, or their lives after his death in 1971 at age 27. It could easily have been titled When He's Strange, since the overwhelming focal point is the Doors' talented but troubled lead singer. That's to be expected, of course, given the sway that Morrison's short life has held for so many pop music fans across nearly four decades. The downward spiral of that life into an abyss of alcohol and drug abuse is never explored, except for fleeting references to his father's life as a career military man. It's bittersweet to watch the snippets of home movie footage of Morrison as a smiling kid trouncing around his suburban neighbourhood, but where's the connective line drawn from the stereotypical childhood to the compelling star who emerged from the fertile Hollywood rock scene of the mid-60s? There are hints that as time went on, he became more interested in his poetry than his life as a rock star. But it's a theme never fully developed, and there's precious little sharing of that poetry to let the audience in on the content or quality of his writings. Depp earnestly offers narrative links through a fairly conventional chronological unfolding of the Doors' career. From Morrison and Manzecchi's meeting as film students at UCLA, through their coming together with the blues-influenced Krieger and the jazz-minded Densmore to start a band, to Morrison's death in his bathtub in Paris, a sad ending that's been endlessly romanticised. The film also extends the myth of the Doors as America's greatest rock group of the 60s, a viewpoint established in a large part by Oliver Stone's wildly fictionalised telling of their story in his 1991 film, The Doors. But The Doors was just one of many acts that came up during a ridiculously fertile period in pop music, and there were many others equally or more influential in various ways, from Buffalo Springfield to the Velvet Underground to Sly and the Family Stone. When Your Strange, however, looks at The Doors' legacy and pop music history in only the most superficial way, DeSillo seems to have missed the wisdom of the very first track of the group's debut album, the one so urgently advocating giving in to the impulse to break on through to the other side. For me, Jim Morrison is an intellectual. The only rock star intellectual? Possibly. Bob Dylan? Intellectual? Well, he's a cultured man. Well read, but an intellectual? Maybe. Jim Morrison's analytical prowess was impressive. His notebooks, diaries, and letters from the Doors are notes of a man who deeply assimilated great thinkers, from Rimbaud, from Arbour, who was almost his contemporary, to Nietzsche. With Morrison and William Burroughs, this bloody lineage of writers and poets reaches very mature levels. I'll stop my ramblings because I sound like a madman myself. When I was a teenager and into my 20s, as you probably know, Steve, I idolised Jim Morrison. And now I have books on him, biographies on him. I've got all his poetry books. I've read about people that knew him and what they've got to say about him. I mean, looking back, I must have been a bit of a prick. But I grew my hair long. I had the leather jacket. I drew the line to the leather pants. I had the I had the well-worn boots. And I was a heavy drinker, amongst other stuff. I went to Paris to find his burial site, sit with the rest of the nutters. I saw this movie that we're discussing in an art house cinema. There was me, a partner at the time, and about four other people. And even then, I thought, it's just missing. It's like the 1991 movie. It's just pointing out that he was just this pisshead that just, like, he's cleverer than what people want to see. And it's annoying that the rest of the band just, it's like, I know you started the podcast Jim Morrison and the Doors, so. But it was the Doors. Like, I remember, well, I don't remember. I read that when house announcers used to say, Jim Morrison and the Doors, Jim would refuse to go on stage because it was the Doors. Because he didn't write all the songs and he needed them as much as they needed him.
I think you can argue that he needed them. Not more, but he was Jim Morrison because of the Doors.
Yeah, well, near the ends of, I mean, they didn't last that long, but the career of the Doors with Jim Morrison, they obviously didn't. He needed to calm down. There was no Priory, was there? There was no help. He was like. I mean, I don't want to hark back to me. Like, I've already pointed out that I was a Jim Morrison wannabe. But here we go again. I believe before, I mean, I'm not going to go into great detail, but before I reached out to get help with certain things, I was self-medicating. And watching things like this, I think he was self-medicating. He didn't know how to stop or control anything. There was no, like, his style that's been copied throughout the ages of rock stardom, he just came up with that himself. So this is, there was no sort of team around him. You can just see him walking around the audience, just chatting to everybody. It's like, he's just crazy. It was all so new and beautiful. Oh, but this is romanticised, isn't it? Like, you don't know, like, I mean, I've read books where he just freaking passed out and pissed himself, but and that's why he wore leather pants. That's why Slash says from Guns N' Roses he wore leather pants, because they're less forgiving. If you wear jeans and you wake up somewhere and you've pissed yourself, like, it's a bit obvious, but if you're in leather pants, it's not so obvious. Thank you for listening, everybody. So we've learned that leather pants are the way forward. There you go.
I think the thing to, well, for me to start with this is, as a more passive fan of The Doors and Jim Morrison.
But do you remember, just to interrupt you, just to annoy you, like, I used to have Bob Dylan's back catalogue. I had Jim, which I've gone and said it myself, The Doors back catalogue, which isn't that many albums, Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. And you used to take the piss out of me, and rightfully so. That's all I listened to. It was like, why would I want to listen to anything else? Do you remember? that was my collection of music.
No, but I think you make a valid point that I believe, and I'm coming from a different viewpoint than you, that Jim Morrison and or The Doors, there's a mystique that exists in what I would call modern pop culture from then until now. So everyone knows who Jim Morrison is and was, and everyone knows who The Doors were and are, as such, if you get me.
Yep.
But the mystique is actually what alluring, has kept the mainstream alive. Now, you and I joke about this, and I have a problem. I think you have a slight more problem than I do, but I never had a problem with anyone having a Jim Morrison t-shirt, because he's an icon, like Freddie Mercury was or Elvis was. You know, icons will
leave. Yeah, I mean, I've calmed down in my old age.
Yeah. Like... No, I think but I think that the point is that when you watch a documentary, I want to be further educated within to the allure, the mystique, the icon, the fame, the infamy, whatever it may be. I would like to be educated. Now, you can be educated in many different ways, and we talked about a number of documentaries about Kurt Cobain or whomever, and we've always been able to come away from each with a little bit of something. Even if not enjoyed the documentary necessarily, we feel like we've learnt more. Now, I know you learnt nothing from this. I think you watched it solely as an art piece because you're a big fan. I watched it more as, I'd like to know a little bit more.
You might say fanatic.
Well, the thing is, and that's the point. So I can't understand why, well, no, I can understand why a fanatic would want to watch this, but I can't understand why a fanatic would watch it more than once, because where it is artistic and as a creative piece, I'm not discrediting it, but there's absolutely nothing that someone like you or even a turned down version of you would take from this, because I watched it and I don't know a fraction of what you know about The Doors. And I
did you enjoy it though?
I enjoyed it, and that's what I was going to lead to, that the enjoyment of the piece. I don't think it's a wonderfully made documentary in the sense of a finished article. I mean, I've read some of the reviews and I don't think I was far off from that. I'm not saying it's a 1 or 2 out of star, but it's creative to a point. I think we all want that, but I would expect nothing less from a story of, you know, such a creative character. At the end of the day, you know, art represents itself, and you would expect the story to be told of Jim Morrison not to be straight and kind of like plain talking. You'd want it to have a little bit of that allure and creativity that we know of Jim Morrison. I did find...
So you're saying it's a Jim Morrison documentary, not a Doors documentary?
I think so.
Was that what you were expecting when you saw the title and saw the front cover of the DVD, well, or whatever, the picture on the screen of the computer?
I actually think it ironically falls in line with the entire kind of commercial and basic understanding of The Doors being Jim Morrison and the Doors, because I think unless you're like you and you've gone and kind of read deeper,
I've drunk from the from the holy grail of the Doors.
But you can't say I just don't see how you tell the story of the Doors without spending 95% of the time talking about Jim Morrison, because as much as the band are a band, I mean,
yeah, but the band's like
the people. I wasn't around, obviously. I was born in the 80s. I can't say, but I, watching that and knowing what I know, I've not been more led to think that people went to see the Doors. I think they went to go and see Jim Morrison and the allure that he was. He was one of the probably.
I think this was a lovely opportunity to have the Doors, the rest of the band, like more prominently in it.
Well, the irony to that is they said they wanted to stay away from it from a personal import. They don't appear on it bar old.
Well, they've said that.
I read that they wanted to keep away from it so it felt real. It felt like the story was meant to tell.
But I do think it's strange there's no Talking Heads and it's just like, dare I say, a wank piece for the director. Just like,
so Robbie Krieger said he felt really happy with it, how the film turned out.
But he didn't even get on with Morrison. He friggin' hated him.
I think that's my point, that the reality is no one's really got behind him. No one, like, I don't feel this story, normally you find with a documentary there's a little twist of like, oh, okay, you can understand that friendship, or you can see, you know, we did it when we talked about Nirvana and you understood a certain relationship between Dave Grohl and Kurt Cobain.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of John Densmore, who didn't like him.
Yeah, so I was going to, yeah.
Krieger liked him, the guitarist. Yeah, they were like really good mates. John Densmore couldn't stand him.
And I just thought it was interesting. It was just interesting to see that, you know, why any surviving member of any band or band's history wouldn't be part of the storytelling of one of the most iconic frontmen of all time. And in a short space of time, he reached the same, you know, not only do they adore Elvis, he reached Elvis and beyond levels of kind of, I mean, that footage of you know, the girls sort of throwing themselves at him. I mean, you know, that was seen, what, 10, 15 years before with Elvis, and that's who he wanted to be. So I've got to say, I love the...
Like a gothic crooner, isn't he? Like, he decided he likes Sinatra more. And he is. If you listen to, like, a lot of, like, the later songs...
Oh, yeah.
He does sound, like, with, like, the brass instruments and stuff. It is just crude. And, like, when... I think it was John Densmore said... Because, I mean, I love jazz and rock and roll and stuff. And the marriage between the Doors with jazz and rock and roll, like, that... I think that just works beautifully. I thought they could have gone into that a bit deeper.
I think that's... I feel like it's an artistic skim on an iconic individual, narrated by, at the time, another iconic individual. You know, Johnny Depp, you know, sort of king of cool through the 90s and the 2000s, and kind of really kind of clever, actually, casting, really, because I would say Johnny Depp's... I thought it was one of the best things of the documentary, that, you know, Johnny Depp's kind of very mellow and chilled out delivery of story. It's very monotonal, isn't it? Which is,
because around then, when was it released? 2010. Yeah. So around then, he would still be in his sort of drinking drugs sort of.
Well, I think he still might be.
World.
Allegedly,
no, he said he doesn't do it. Hey, I'm not getting involved and he said he doesn't touch.
Well,
a mega pint, pint of wine isn't a
look,
pint.
To be honest, Johnny Depp was a clever casting, and anyone I would imagine who sort of, you know, sways on that kind of commercial peripheral of like enjoying rock and roll icons, like Johnny Depp falls somewhere within there. Do you know what I mean? Like, he works within it, doesn't he? So I think that was a really, really good piece. And like I said, probably the best bit of artistic delivery. I'm assuming you referring to the start of the film, which was the art house piece that Jim Morrison put together. Is that right?
It's throughout the documentary when he's like hitchhiking, and then there's roadkill, and then
it opens with it, four minutes, five minutes. Yeah, and it's again, it's slightly confusing. And actually, I'll be dead honest with you, it turned me off the documentary to start with. I was like, what am I going to watch for? Because it's not a short documentary.
I mean, what I thought was good for me was seeing how crisp and the imagery was of that footage. So that was quite nice. But that's about
I think the technical delivery of piece to piece is very good. And so when I'm being critical of documentary, I'm actually talking about content over delivery. When I say creative, I don't mean it's like groundbreaking creative, like sort of output, but I do think the way it's very well edited, it's very well produced, it's got a very kind of...
And also what I wanted to point out was I do find it not strange, but quite amazing, really, considering how in this fast-paced world we live in now with imagery and Instagram and whatever, Spotify and imagery in general, you know, how much footage there was and is of the Doors from them getting wasted and partying, backstage footage and then live footage and then them just sat in a car or on a boat. I was really impressed with, they must have trawled through a lot of footage to piece all that together.
Well, to a broader theory of mine, that obviously prior to kind of, you know, our generation coming through in the late 90s and heading to noughties, there was no, well, even late 90s, you know, mid-noughties probably where things start to change, there was no way of capturing anything but a bit of video footage or a cool photograph. I mean, you know, now we live with so much delivered to us, we probably disregard 95% of what we get given. But now, looking back, I think you would almost take a precious photograph or precious.
I wonder if that's because they were film students, because you look back at like other bands, there is nowhere near from the 60s, besides the Beatles and the Rolling Stones possibly, there is nowhere near as much footage as, unless it's all hidden away, like the amount of footage that the Doors have, considering they weren't around that long.
You'd expect any art film student to kind of be encouraging of that to be done, and they probably have people doing it on the side
anyway.
I think
by the looks of it,
like you said, what I mean is that I think they would have recruited people or got people to do that for them, because you'd respect it and understand it. Maybe other musicians, I mean, take someone like Eric Clapton, for instance, he may not have had any enjoyment or want or care to enjoy visual because he's such a musician within himself.
Yeah, he just wants to stand in the dark, basically. Yeah. He said as much, hasn't he?
Well,
his guitar.
Yeah. And I think that's the point. And again, I think all of this, every time we kind of breach on a new sort of subject of the documentary, I think it keeps coming back round to this constant kind of want to be fed the allure. So you're being kind of almost drip fed. And I thought there was a really good bit about 40, 50 minutes in when they're talking about basically when it all kicks off for the Doors, when it all goes wrong. I think it's 1969. And Jimbo, as he's obviously going by at this point, because he's in his depth of chaos, but the cutting and the imagery, because obviously it's not video, is it? Most of it is actually still images being stitched together, and the way between Johnny Depp telling the sort of history of, and just the visuals, really, really strong. And it made me actually think about like early footage that we would have grown up, say, with like Glastonbury. And I don't mean like watching Glastonbury live, I just mean like, you know, Glastonbury for our generation was the kind of, what is less so now, I suppose, but certainly turn of the 90s, kind of like the Woodstock of what we had in the UK. And a lot of it was kind of iconic images. That's what you remember. You see these pictures, and that's what made me think of that gig that they're referring to, where he got the old boy out, didn't he, and got himself in a world of trouble. That's the right gig, isn't it, Jord?
He doesn't, but there's no photographic evidence. There's no evidence whatsoever of that actually happening.
can we say he didn't? And you know more than me.
He got charged with it. The police never said he did anything. The bands, obviously, they would have just stuck with him anyway. They never said that he did anything.
You'd always have your mates back.
But if you look at the kids getting interviewed, they're all like, were they even at the gig? They just look like people that have been pulled from the street and said, say this. Yeah. And it's like, this isn't entertainment. This is.
Yeah, but then. But obviously,
Then he got done. He got done for what is it? Doing fellatio live or something. And basically, he's just watching the intricate finger work of Robbie Krieger.
To honest with you, I'm not in the 1960s. I'm not saying that anything that Jim Morrison did on that kind of that piece, you know, where they're talking about what he supposedly did do, that wasn't. Look, people were doing a lot worse than that before and after.
The argument is, I believe, whether he did or he didn't, I don't believe he did, but I've obviously got no proof of that, but except there is no proof that he did.
My point is,
I think there was such a hoo-ha about it is because the audience didn't agree to see it. So they went to see a rock band.
But I don't.
Is that what you mean?
For two reasons. No. For two reasons I mention it is because first of all the directors left it in. So if you're like
yeah, because that was the huge downturn of like Willie is going to be locked up for 3 years, was it? I can't remember.
You're a fan who's read up on him and you don't believe it.
No.
And so. I'm saying that the filmmakers only left it in there in the same way that a tabloid journalist of this day and age.
Because I don't believe it happens, but that's by the by. He left that in because that was the turning point when everything went tits up for the band because he probably wasn't allowed to play Miami. He was going to get sent down. He didn't know the future of the band. His drinking got worse. He flew to Paris. That's where he died. So... you got to leave in the point where it all went wrong.
Yeah, but my point being is it's been left in for provocative reason of storytelling.
Oh yeah,
and you know, but no one's defended. You're the first person to defend him that I've heard from listening to this documentary.
The first person.
You see my point?
Yeah, because there was no talking heads. There was no one could defend him. It was just Johnny Depp reading what he got told to read.
Point.
Is that your point?
To my point, yeah, because we're talking about a documentary that we've watched. So in its standalone position, we can only know. I always put myself in an isolated position as a viewer, and never a fan, because...
That's my problem. That's my problem with this documentary, because I needed to take myself out of being a fan and take it for what it is, which, for me, it just showed Morrison... as a wreckhead, just getting pissed, and I think he's much more than that. But then, would I know that if I hadn't read about him?
I wouldn't say neither have to be separated. I think he was a wreckhead, but a genius and talented with it as well.
But the thing is, it doesn't really push into that, does it? It doesn't push into his poetry. It doesn't really push into he went to Paris, like all the read, like the recordings and stuff of his poetry. If you want to know about Jim Morrison, you need to add in all like the parts of how intelligent he was, not just how.
Again, to my point,
he was
it's about
drinking all the time.
Well, it's you know, it's the old term, sex sells, controversy sells, and that's the point that. You talk about Jim Morrison, you'll get a bigger audience.
Yeah, it does sell. It does sell, but like he died. He died in 1971. So can we move on from him just wearing his leather pants and partying?
We can't if films like this are made.
Exactly. That's my argument. That is my entire argument.
Yes, but you're coming at from a defensive point of view.
I am. Yes.
One of your icons.
Yes,
and I'm looking at it from a point of view that says, well, I as a again, nowhere near as big a fan as you. So I think, again, to my point about this documentary, it isn't wonderfully inspiring if you're a big fan and which a lot of people will be. We're talking about one of the biggest icons in rock and roll history. And then maybe like a passive fan like me who enjoys and respects and will turn on the Doors. But
I think on the quiet, you're becoming quite a fan of the Doors.
It's not on the quiet. I think it's funny, actually, because I actually was speaking to a friend about this the other day. Because
when we talked about LA Woman, and you're like, there was a different podcast, you were quite amazed.
It's not about... I think what it is there's elements of the era of Doors that I actually... No, and I don't mean the Doors, by the way, just the era of that kind of late 60s. And I would include other big bands that have kind of copied the style. There's a certain stylistic delivery of some of the music that I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not anti-fan of, but it's not my go-to. You very much...
But you think that's because it's been overplayed?
It's definitely been over...
Or you're just not...
No, I think there's been an overhype, but there's also, I think... We all like what we like, and you can only be true to yourself by kind of owning and knowing what you like. And I think what it is some of the hippier movement of sound, not visual, not iconic time periods, just some of the sound can like wind me up a little bit. And it's only because it's a little bit one dimensional at times, not in the sense that it could some people will find it the most inspiring sort of time of literature and delivery of content, word, artistic output, freedom, all that kind of stuff. For me, I struggle a bit with it. And again, it's not to say I don't enjoy it. And obviously, the Doors very, very iconically tap into that. They are much more than that, by the way, I believe. Anyway, I think they've got so much more. And there's a clear genius behind Jim Morrison. And again, I'm talking to, it's hard for me to talk to, you know, one of their biggest fans at the end of this podcast, because there's no critique or criticism. And some of their stuff is some of the best you'll ever hear. I just came late to the party, and I think, as you joked about before, possibly you either jump in when you're 19 or 18 or whatever age you were at the time, I think you're younger than that, 15 or 16, but you either jump in then and you go deep like you did, or you kind of skirt around it a bit.
And only just survives,
well,
may I
add. Again, you know, I skirted around it and dipped in and out of it. And we all have our wants. What I have enjoyed through the whole process of kind of like understanding the Doors a bit more over the past 10 years as a slightly more mature music kind of fan is actually, you know, there is some of the most creative and ingenious rollouts for what, 4.5 years of a band being together. You know, we're talking...
It's incredible, isn't it? It's only Hendrix that probably, I mean, off the top of my head, it did less years. Before he died.
How long did Nirvana swing around for before Kurt Cobain? Well, they were a bit longer, weren't they?
They were like 80s to 95, late 80s to 95.
Yeah, I think they were like 7 years. But yeah, I mean, the Doors probably made one of the biggest impacts on short space time. Yeah, Hendrix, you're probably spot on with that. You could argue Janis Joplin would have been, she was only about 20, was she about 20, 21?
She's 27 when she
when she hit this, because I know she was friends with Jim Morris, wasn't she? Well, they had a...
They didn't actually like each other. Because they were both, I think they saw themselves in each other, because they were both heavy drinkers and they were both, I don't know, like... He did have a lot of arguments and stuff. Like one of the stories is that Jim Morrison was gonna get with her, and he never turned up to see her, to sleep with her, or whatever they were gonna do. And that's when she died. In the hotel room waiting for him, apparently.
Oh, right, okay. Because I know...
Yeah, she'd taken pills and drinking, and her brain stopped giving signals to her heart to keep on pumping, and that's how she died.
I mean, I know the documentary refers to him struggling with the death of her and Hendrix. Which is...
Because there's a live... I mean, he's absolutely screaming out of his brain, like as in drunk. But there's a rare audio clip of him and Hendrix. Morrison's singing and Hendrix is playing, but they both sound a bit worse for wear, but it's pretty impressive for what could have been, I suppose.
Well, I think as well, I mean, it's ironic that I'm sure that's why the documentary does focus on it again, because I do think, again, I'm going to stick to this. This documentary does hit trigger points of interest that are a little bit shallow. Again, as I refer to the focusing on his drinking and his drug taking over other things like the poetry. It does touch on the poetry, that's not to say it doesn't, but it definitely doesn't go into a fanboy depth, does it, by any means, George? But
no, but like, I just feel you've waited this long. Like, it came out in 2010. You've waited this long for a documentary to come out. The 1991 film of Oliver Stone was a bit...
Well, it's fantasized, isn't it?
It's just fantasy. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really mind that before. I didn't know anything about Jim Morrison. When I watched it, that's, you know, what is what it is. Nice bit of entertainment. But you wait this long for a documentary, a cohesive documentary, and I think it misses huge chunks out of Jim Morrison's life. If it's either about the Doors as a band, as a unit, or it's about Jim Morrison, and I don't think it's either.
I mean,
it does focus on Jim Morrison a lot, but if it's going to focus on Jim Morrison, get everything in.
Well, I prefer...
Go on.
I prefer after you get through the artistic start, you kind of just meet the band and you get this kind of quite a nice relay into how the band was formed and being a little bit more, I don't know what the word would be, I enjoy...
When he sings Moonlight Mile and all that, and Moonlight Mile? Moonlight Drive, and
well, I think it was more the
God, I'm a fan, I can't remember the song, but like he sings it on the beach, and I think that's beautiful. Like, he's a poet, and then they wanted to turn his poetry into...
But that's what I like, the
fact, because poetry back then, I mean, still kind of now, I suppose, it meant something. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm in love with you and roses and stuff. It's dark and dangerous.
I think we've touched.
That's the poetry that Jim Morrison was providing.
Yeah, I think
like with William Burroughs and stuff like that. I mean, he wasn't a poet, but he was like an incredible writer.
I think we've touched on modern versions of that when we talked about like Pete Doherty and the Libertines and stuff. I think, you know, I don't think there's any denial in that. I think maybe there was a...
Yeah, but he's not writing poetry. Has he written a poetry book? He's a lyricist. He's a musician.
Yeah, but
like, that's the difference. Like, where if you're a poet, obviously you can put music to poetry, which the Doors did, but I think you need to have a published book to be a poet. No, that's not true at all. You don't need a published book, but you don't need music to... I don't know how to explain it. As a lyricist in a band, I think it's different to being a poet. Well, that's just me. I'll cut this out because it makes no sense. As you were, carry on.
No, I just think that, again, it's referring to the documentary homes in on certain things in certain ways, and I enjoy the facts of how the band formed, because actually the film doesn't really tell you that. The Oliver Stone film, it doesn't really kind of go into that level of detail.
But on the same hand, this has just popped into my head, actually. So if you go onto the rbr.music Instagram page and see what we put out there. Like, obviously I edit quite a bit of stuff and write quite a bit of stuff, whatever. I'm not here to spoon. I've got a word count to fit into the little write-up bit at the bottom of the picture or the reel. And I'm not there to spoon feed you. I'm there for you to find out more yourselves. Like, here's a clip of... So maybe, just thinking out loud, that's what this documentary is about. It's not here to spoon feed you. There's so much stuff out there. Go and investigate. If it's going to grip your imagination,
But then haven't you got a sort of honour within storytelling that you would deliver the right depth? I mean, you said it yourself that you find it frustrating they don't talk about...
Well, I was banging on about that, but I was just trying to meet you halfway.
Well, no, because I think what it is, it's like and again, I hope anyone listening to this goes away and watches this, because actually, it's a...
And follows us and likes, gives us 5 stars for this podcast. That'd be lovely.
But I think it,
and this episode,
it's more a case of the this documentary, from what I've read, was reviewed okay. lots of fives and sixes out of tens. I think Rotten Tomatoes gave it 60%. It's just
that's not okay, is
no,
it? 60%?
Well, no,
that's pretty awful.
Well, it's not. No, I wouldn't know. Awful would be 10%.
I mean, if I got 60% from a maths class, from a maths exam, I'd be buzzing. If my sister got 60% from a maths exam, she'd be mortified.
No, I think famously in England, I think you hit in around the 60s, you're getting like a first class degree. 40% is pass rate for degrees, I'm sure. That's what I was told at uni, I'm sure. So, anyway, we digress. Okay. But no, to the point... what I'm trying to say is that if it is 5.5-star, 6-star out of 10, or, you know, 3, like, at the end of the day, you've got to give what it is. At the end of the day, we're sitting here talking about what we've watched, and I think we both agree that, you know, it is a perfectly acceptable... creative-ish documentary. It tells enough of the story of the Doors. It tells enough of the story about Jim Morrison that, you know, if it's aimed at a wider audience, and let's face it, it did go into Sundance, and most documentaries that do go into Sundance, they are used as that platform to kind of get exposure, because other documentaries don't get anywhere near Sundance and often have more of a, you know what I mean, more of an in-depth kind of delivery of journalism. It's not a journalistic piece, this. This is a creative kind of, you know, art piece. I just think that, I think to fully enjoy it, you'd have to be a complete novice. And then I think you'd go and relearn everything you've just watched anyway. Does that make sense? So like, even me, who's nowhere near your fanboy level, like I'm watching it going, well, I know that. And there were a few tidbits, but I reckon nothing surprised you in this, right?
No,
And you know other Jim Morrison and Doors fans that are exactly like you. They were like, yeah, it's just a basic documentary of his story, shot with some of his footage and some really cool.
And it didn't really go into. Yeah, I won't bore people with what it didn't go into, but I just felt if you're gonna give us a documentary with Johnny Depp narrating,
yeah.
Even have it maybe two parts or something. Like,
so what we're saying is it's got all the formula to be a good documentary, but just has...
Well, it doesn't have all the formula for me, because there's no one... I suppose it's old school, but there's no one backing up what Johnny Depp's saying or disagreeing with him. There's no talking heads. There's no...
Well, we have watched other documentaries where they avoid that, and maybe that was an artistic decision to... avoid the
it must have been an artistic decision, but I just feel it missed a trick with, because there's multiple faces of Jim Morrison,
but then is almost the Jim Morrison story too hard to tell in even an hour and a half of documentary?
Well, yeah, so why do it?
one star out of ten, good night.
Not far off.
I think what I mean by it has all the kind of potential pieces to be the right documentary. I think when you look at, we've not talked about this actually since we've done documentary, but I actually like the front cover. And the front cover looks very of an era. You feel very Doors. You've got Jim Morrison's iconic sort of silhouettes. And so you're fed into it, and then
absolutely. That's my point. It's like, yeah, this is it. It's the Doors. It's all about Jim Morrison.
And then it opens up with, again, it turned me off a little bit, but it's some, obviously, once you understand it's his footage and you, okay. And then it feeds into this kind of history. And then also, I always like a friendship from youth that becomes, you know, brilliant, which clearly it did with him and, what was his name? What was his mate?
Mr. Ray Manzecchi.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, they, you know, to hear they had that friendship and almost like pushed each other. And then you hear the history of the other band members, don't you, with the Spanish guitar player.
The flamenco, yeah.
And was it the...
Jazz
drums. Yeah. And like I love that, because that, for me, yeah. They're like little tid... And also,
and it's like, now we're getting into it. Now we're learning about the band. Oh, no, we're going to learn more about Jim's drinking. Excellent.
And they do repeat, and they're drinking. And it's funny, there was a funny bit where I had to like rewind it, because I thought I'd just missed a bit. But actually what I'd done is I just heard the same... Yeah. Sort of sequence of sentence twice, which was basically like drink, drink, no, drugs, 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 switch to drink, drugs. And I was like, oh, is he back on the... I didn't really understand why the sort of narrative...
Because understand and what I've read is he quit the drugs and just focused on the drink. And then when he went to Paris, his partner, Pam, was doing heroin and with one of her, it was the 60s or whatever, with a lover of hers, which doesn't really get... Well, I suppose Pam's not part of the Doors, is she? So he got jealous. I don't know if he got jealous, but he thought, I'll do heroin. But it's Jim Morrison. He can do more than anybody in his mind. And that's what killed him. So you put him in a bath. So apparently, they put... when you overdose, you get put from what I've heard, you get put in a very cold bath, like a freezing bath, and it's meant to start your heart again. So he was found in a freezing cold bath. So it's like, so the speculation is he was doing heroin with Pam, and it all went tits up. It went wrong.
And I imagine there's legalities attached to that, but wouldn't that be more interesting to hear of, like, conspiracies and why and how he died?
Like, yeah, I wanted to. And then he's singing, like, one. Do you remember the Hyacinth House in LA Woman? Yeah. He's singing about his death in a bathroom. And I'm like, that's weird. And he ends up dying in a bathroom. I mean, coincidence, again, obviously, possibly.
Well, we just nodded to the 27 Club and obviously how he felt when Janis Joplin and Hendrix died. I think there's lots of things that, again, it could all be coincidence. They could all just be a law and everything else that goes with it. I think the point being, when we're talking about this documentary, it just doesn't touch on anything properly, bar a very, very passive approach towards a bit of the Doors history, a bit of the infamy of live performance. And then they only really skirt around this iconic music legend, this front man of front men. And you come away feeling, I just came away thinking, well, all I'm going to want to do now is try and understand more. And that's a good thing. So if you take,
I'll lend you a few books if you want.
Well, if I take you out of the equation, I think
your life will be a lot better and easier.
I think if people aren't your level of sort of fanboy, I think you can respect this and enjoy this documentary as an intro to kind of what, you know, wanting to know more about the Doors. There are many documentaries like this about the Beatles or Elvis that you know, there's loads of books over the years, unofficial biographies and stuff, where you read them and you go, oh, okay, that just gives me enough to go on. And then you actually go and read a bit more and you explore a bit more. And I suppose there's nothing wrong in that, but to the point of a not wonderfully, in when I say industry, I mean music industry, acclaimed film, The Doors, 1991, to this being released, it was actually made for 2009, released in 2010. Like, that's almost 20 years of opportunity of filmmakers to touch on a legend and a legendary band.
Yeah, but I think the people that own his rights and stuff are very strict with how his image gets portrayed. Well, I mean...
Yeah, so for me, then, when you start thinking like that, why bother doing it at all, then?
That was when I came out of the cinema, and when I've rewatched it, that is my feeling. It's like,
I actually don't remember nods to even, again, there's things that I know. I remember them referring to Jimbo, but like, I never heard them refer to the Lizard King. I never.
They did briefly, but it was.
Did they? Okay.
But yeah. I think it's not really touched upon.
And then they skip, because obviously, there are some bits with him where they start with his family life. Obviously, he obviously comes away from his family to live his own life. And then they end it, don't they, with almost a one liner that his father sort of finally understood him in death, which is a provocative line, of course, isn't it? Of course, but I suppose you have to bring something around. I think the interesting thing as well, I would have liked to have understood the relationship from, Pamela and the band, because there's an element of she took him away.
Yeah, the Ono, what's the Beatles?
Okay, Ono.
Okay, Ono. I don't think it was that bad, but I think she just wanted to save him. Like I said, there was no sort of help that we have now with, I don't know, therapies and stuff. But I'm not saying she was as bad as him, but I mean, she was doing heroin in front of him. So it's obviously not, it's a toxic relationship. And I'm not saying they didn't love each other, but he's trying to get clean. Well, I don't know if he was trying to, but he wanted to get out of the limelight and he wanted to, stop his drinking, or so he says. And then his life partner is doing heroin or whatever. So, you know, his mind isn't all there and he's coping with that.
So I think we can certainly surmise that this documentary can be read in two different ways, from someone like me, who's more of a passive fan, as a little educational piece that feeds into a little bit about the Doors and a bit about Jim Morrison, and also the historic facts to a certain level that can lead you into wanting to know a bit more. And it's fairly entertaining for an hour and 20 minutes. I think then there's people like yourself, Jordan, that there's no real need to watch this except the fact that you're a fan of the Doors and you want to watch and hear as much as possible. Agreed?
Yeah, I mean, it is still incredible to watch Morrison on stage surrounded by those policemen. And he's jumping around and he seems so free and wild. And if anything, the documentary, for a newbie, not that I am, but should make you want to learn more about. I don't think you'd go away from it thinking, I've understood everything here, I don't need to learn anymore. I think you'd come away from it wanting to know more. And maybe that's why the documentary was made, because although it is Jim's life to death, there are so many unanswered questions in this documentary where you can find in books and magazines, and it's all well written, is history. And there's obviously the mystique of the Lizard King and Jimbo and Jim Morrison himself. And it's fun to learn about him. He's one of these characters that is just interesting because he surrounded himself with drunks and madmen himself and poets. So it's all going to get mixed up. And it is interesting to cut through the fiction to find the facts, but you're not going to find it in this documentary anything more than some face value sort of money-making machine that this had turned out to be. So there you have it. Please give it a watch. I sounded like I was kind of top myself then. Sorry,
well,
guys.
Well, dare I say, what is the RBR.rating, Jordan?
Bizarrely, as a fan, a fanatic, a lover of the Doors, I would probably give it 2.5 out of 5. But as a critic, critiquing it, 3.5. I'm happy to give it 3.5.
So you're saying that
taking my fanboy out of the situation, I think as a starter pack to the Doors, it's worth watching to learn about. It gives you a fair bit, and then you'd have to go away and learn more and find how in depth Jim Morrison is and how well the bands work as a unit.
Well, better still, get two friends to watch it, one a fanboy, one a passive.
Yeah, and I'll just throw beer cans at the screen and scream, "This is wrong, what are you doing?" And you'll be happy listening to Johnny Depp's voice.
I don't think you will. I mean, that's where I think you gain that extra point, because Johnny Depp's voice is very cool.
Yeah, that's the only reason I gave it 3. Otherwise, it would be 0.5.
It's very in keeping with the music, the sound, and actually the documentary does eventually flow very easily. The last 40 minutes do rocket by. So The RBR dot rating 3.5 out of 5 for When You Are Strange.
And may I just add again, we did listen, well, watch and listen on our Status Audio earbuds, and it was always amazing quality. And listening to the Doors music throughout the documentary, yeah, that was a real turn on for both of us. So please do check out Status Audio. You can find them, Status Audio, on Instagram, or you can go onto our page, Instagram, and look at our followers. We don't have, well, we have a lot of followers. Look at who we're following, and you can find Status Audio there. So yeah, cool, Status Audio, check them out.
Cheers. Well, thank you, Jordan, and thank you, everyone else, for listening. It means the world to us that you do. If you do have any suggestions or recommendations for future documentaries, please reach out and let us know via the rbr.music Instagram. We wholeheartedly enjoy your input, and as I say, it keeps us going. If you do have time, please do like, share, and subscribe, and don't forget to leave us a review, good, bad, or otherwise. Have a good one, and thanks again for listening. Until next time, cheers.